Hey, listeners, and welcome back to the second episode in the series about never being the smartest person in the room. For this episode, I had the opportunity to talk with Garth Nichols, Vice Principal of Experiential Education and Innovation at Havergal College. In addition to talking about educational curation, Garth shared his insights on the impact of AI on teacher training and changes to classroom practice. There's lots to think about in this episode, but my favorite thing that Garth said relates to AI. It's a rising tide that lifts all boats. If you're not sure what that means, stick around and find out. My name's Joe Takar, and you're listening to That High School Life. Hey, That High School Life listeners. Thanks for tuning back into another episode. I'm happy to announce that today I have a special guest. His name is Mr. Garth Nichols.
Nichols.
And we will be speaking today about my project work for my Master of Education in Technology from the Memorial University of Newfoundland. If you're not familiar with what's going on, last episode I introduced this when we spoke with Dana, but I have to put together what's called a knowledge mobilization plan, and part of that plan involves sharing my knowledge with everyone. So to help me do that today, Garth, pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks so much, Joe. I've been listening to your podcast. We were talking a bit earlier. I love how you're bringing forth student voice, and I'm really interested in your project too with Memorial University. So really happy and delighted to be on here.
Great. And honestly, before we even jump into it, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, it wasn't even because of my project. That was more of a secondary thought. And sorry in advance to my professors who are listening to this. But really, it was a second thought. I wanted to talk to you because I heard your podcast, Lassoing Leadership, and I am a huge fan of Ted Lasso. And when I heard it, I'm embarrassed to say this, but I crept you on the internet. I found you on LinkedIn. I'm pretty sure you saw that I viewed your profile. I checked out Cohort 21, which we're going to talk about more. And it just seemed really, really cool what you were doing. And I do want to circle back to Ted Lasso.
Yeah,
so thanks, let's put a pin in that for now.
I'm really happy you reached out. And I think I subscribe to the same concept of your knowledge mobilization. I think the smartest person in the room is the room, and the more people you have in the room, the better we all learn together.
100%.
So that's part of my leadership philosophy. So again, happy to be on here, Joe.
Awesome. Before we really jump into this, can you tell me a little bit about yourself? I'm not just interested in you as a podcaster, but also your role at your school right now. Your title sounds awesome. Yeah. I'd like to hear more about it if you'd like to share.
Yeah, so I've wanted to be in education since I was very young. I think if my younger self would have coined it as I want to be a teacher. And as I became a teacher, I was a big brother when I was in high school and university. I was always coaching different sports, mainly basketball, and I'm a rowing coach as well. And then got into education through coaching, and then really fell in love with it. Fell in love with the relationships that you bring, that bring out the learning, both for me and my students. And then really got involved over a period of time into the meta systems and administration of education. So why we teach, how we teach, what we teach, and who we teach, the role of parents, the role of boards, all that stuff. And so I started teaching at an independent school in Port Hope called Trinity College School. An incredible institution, organization. And they did a lot for me in terms of letting me try things out. And they also supported me at the Klingenstein Summer Institute. If you've never heard of Klingenstein, I strongly recommend that you look that up. That's a transformative professional development for independent school educators in the early years of their career. And that just really expanded what I think education can and might possibly be. And so I've worked in a number of different schools, and I'm currently at Havergal College, which is an all-girls independent school. It's situated in Midtown Toronto at Lawrence and Avenue Road. And it's an all-girls independent school with a mission statement of preparing young women to make a difference. And my role is, in a lot of ways, really accentuating how we bring that mission to life. So my role is centered on our global experience program and our innovation program.
Right.
And what I like to say is, at Havergal College, you always have a solid educational experience. But if you wanted to be in business, for example, if you knew at a young age you wanted to be in business, you could take courses that are offered in classes. You could join one of our many business-oriented clubs, like Financial Club, Investment Club. We have an organization called DECA here as well. But what we do in our innovation side is we offer another leap. We offer digital micro-credentials, and this one would be in contemporary finance, where we look at ESG investing, capital markets, and cryptocurrency, things that aren't captured in these clubs and things that aren't necessarily captured in the curriculum too.
Amazing.
So we do a lot of great things. And then I've been able to take students to the Kingdom of Bhutan in the Himalayas. We just got back from Nairobi, Kenya, mm-hmm. for a round square student-led conference, which was really great. And so that's what I do. And that's and so I'm interested in all things education and all things educational leadership.
Man, we could do like three or four more episodes just based on what you told me. I'm really interested in the service learning part. But again, I hope to have you back on here, Garth, because
that'd be great.
I know you have a hard stop and I need to get through this so I can finish my master's. Yep. So we talked about, or initially before, when I introduced you to this topic and I introduced myself to you, I did send you my final project, and my final project focuses on the importance of curational competency for teachers. And based on my research, it's becoming a bigger and bigger and bigger deal as we move forward into what we refer to as 21st century learning. Given that one of my focuses was 21st century competencies, in your role as an administrator, can you see the need for these competencies being needed as a way to complete our practice as educators?
I do. Like, that's the simple answer.
Yeah.
You know, teachers' colleges they do a great job in so many ways. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the disposition being the skill and the will to be in education, the demands have changed dramatically over the last, 20 years, 10 years, 5 years, 2 years, 1 year since, generative AI has, reared its head into education as well. So I do think that these 21st century competencies lend themselves to educators in the sense that we don't necessarily feel the pressing need to practice these skills through our Bachelor of Education. And the more that we can have educators coming into the classroom who are willing to be, all those things, the guide on the side, are willing to be that facilitator versus the content expert in the room, and really willing to engage students with where they are at and having the capability and confidence to actually learn with and alongside your students, that is more and more the dispositions that are needed.
One of the things that stood out to me was that you pointed out that there's a radical shift from teacher to educator. And my point before that was that there's been a shift from from centralized expertise to distributed expertise. How do we facilitate that in practice?
It's a great question. The reason why I say it's a radical shift is because, you get these questions as someone who is in education. You're a teacher. What do you teach? And you tend to answer those questions in terms of the discipline or the grade. I teach grade 6. I teach math, or I teach social sciences and whatever. More and more, you have to be able to say, I teach humans. And then you have to get to that why of you teach them, right? I am teaching humans so that we can have a sustainable future. I am teaching humans to be better human beings to one another so we can avoid what's happening right now in our world. So in that way, it's a radical shift that you are not teaching something like a curriculum. Mm-hmm. You are teaching skills, you are teaching mastery, you are teaching students how to articulate themselves with global fluency, cultural fluency. So that's why I call it a radical shift, because I do think that many bachelors of education organizations, institutions are training teachers. We really need to train them to be educators so that they're willing to give up that. I'm going to use the word ego, but that's not the right word. It's not like teachers have an ego.
Yeah.
But it's giving up that centrality of their place in the classroom. And we have an incredible document in Ontario. It's called Growing Success. Mm-hmm. It came out in 2010. It's 14 years old. It's a brilliant document. And one of the statements that is in that document is that teachers, educators need to rethink their position in the learning pathway of their student. So if we are always saying that I am the source of information, and I will write the test and you will write the test and I will grade you, we have to think beyond that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I do like that you brought up, and this is kind of an aside, but I really do like that you brought up the finding your why. oftentimes in teachers college, I remember hearing that so much. I finished teachers college in 2015, but from 2014 to 2015, that was driven into our heads. Find your why, find your why, find your why. But once you get into a teaching situation, it almost becomes a trite kind of phrase that you hear. So encouraging teachers to, you know, genuinely engage, not just by like going through the motions of finding your why, but figuring out how you can reposition yourself is really cool. And I like that you kind of unpack that here.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like schools have mission statements, we have to have a mission statement as an individual.
Yeah.
And I think just as our institutions, like your school has values, like they've named values, mm-hmm. we have named values. We as educators need to name our values, and we need to say, if I'm going to work at this school, can I make that strong connection between my why and my values
yeah.
and the school's why and their values.
Totally. Yeah. I wanted to bridge now the idea of values with this event that you've conceived for the teachers in independent schools in Ontario. It's called Cohort 21. I was reading about it. Again, it sounds really, really cool. Would you be able to elaborate on how that works and how it encourages teachers to develop?
Yeah, really, it is. I think it is one of the best professional developments that I have been a part of. Mm-hmm. And I'm speaking as like the co-founder and yeah. all that stuff. I still get so much out of every year. So we're in our 12th year now. And it's my partner in crime is named Justin Medved, and he works at the York School. And he and I met and started sort of sharing ideas. And we both found that we were dissatisfied with our current professional development options that were out there. These yeah. one-day conferences, or you go away for 3 days. And there was nothing that was really sticky about these conferences. And yeah. you had to really work to make them sticky for yourself. And eventually it would die down. And so you'd go to your history teachers conference, you come back with these great ideas, and then life would get in the way, school would get in yeah. the way, and you can't and you can't hang on to those ideas in order to plan for the following year.
Yes.
And you'd yeah. hear these great stories and you'd connect with people, but those connections would actually, you know, dissipate because of people's calendars. And so we came up with this concept of Cohort 21, which is 4 face-to-face sessions over the course of a school year. Mm-hmm. And they're strategically planned at different points throughout the year. And we saw this opportunity, and we started because we were really interested in tech integration. At the time, it was like, you know, what is Twitter and the Stammer model that came out of yeah. Came out of Apple. And we wanted teachers to explore that with us. Right. Not that we were the experts, but we wanted teachers to explore it with us. And we are running this through our provincial body, which is called CIS Ontario.
Yep.
And I remember, you know, 12 years ago going to them and pitching this idea. And one of the people on the board, he asked, why would I send a teacher to this? It's not based in grade level, and it's not based in subject matter.
Yeah.
And our response was, because education is changing. Mm-hmm. And we need to have people in all of our schools have at least a lens into what that change is and how that shift can actually be leveraged for, you know, ethical, responsible learning. Mm-hmm. And so ever since then, we've had that lens of educator, not teacher in a classroom of a specific subject. And so we were teaching things like the SAMR model, the TIMS model. We were teaching things like Twitter in the classroom. At the time, Google Circles in the classroom too. But also how to have the mindset to introduce that to your students and be ready and willing to learn from your students.
Right.
This has evolved over the last, you know, 12 years because Twitter's now X and everyone knows what Twitter is. And some people have yeah. left it and some people are with it. And so we've iterated, we've actually listened to our participants. We've listened to the different schools, and we've changed to this notion of like a design thinking approach, a human centered design approach. And so every teacher comes either with a big question in mind or an action project, or they just come willing and ready to find their action project right. or to find their big question. And so we've got 4 face-to-faces. And the first one is about building community. So teachers learn best when they learn in community with each other. Mm-hmm. Face-to-face number 2 is finding your big question. Number 3 is acting on your big question, generating research and all that stuff. And number 4, we tongue-in-cheek, we call that the end of the beginning, where you can no longer unsee human-centered design.
Right.
You now have like 30, 50, 70 people that you can turn to. And hopefully within those 70 people, you've got 3 or 4 critical friends, critical colleagues outside of your school. And what we've been finding is that doing this big thinking work out with people who are outside of your institution is very generative. There's a bit more freedom to play. And there's a lot of freedom to actually critique the ideas of others. And so we've got really, I mean, radical candor in the conversations, you know. Some conversation would be like, Joe, I like your idea here, but I'm going to push you further because I think you can go further. You know, what if you did this or this instead? And having these conversations is really the secret sauce, I think, to Cohort 21, you know, having that network, that trust. And so we've got all of our action plans are published on our website. So you don't, they're not behind a paywall. They're not behind a password. You can actually go to our site and click action plan. You can see, I think we now have like over 300 action plans in the school, all based on things from technology integration to well-being, to leading through change, to equity, diversity, inclusion, indigenous ways of knowing, being, and doing. So yeah, it's been an incredible ride, and we're averaging about, we're averaging about 40 teachers per year. And we've been doing it for 12 years. So we have a great network of educators in the CIS Ontario. And we love it every year.
Yeah, I love it. And I haven't even been there. It sounds awesome. For anybody who's listening, I'll make sure to link Cohort 21 in the show notes if you're interested in learning more. But Garth, I wanted to come back to what you said about teachers learning effectively when we put them into these communities. One of the things I touched on in my project was the importance of social knowledge communities. And it's basically virtual communities that are set up where educators can come together and trade resources, trade ideas. And I really like how Cohort 21 sort of mediates this interaction or sets the grounds for mediation, because one of the things I found was left unmediated, social knowledge communities tend to turn into places where resources are traded, but not always with a critical eye. And it turns into just gathering resources for the sake of gathering resources instead of being critical. But it's that critical piece that makes such a big difference, you know, when we take these resources to the classroom.
Yeah, I think you've identified a couple of things. And what we're finding now is because we've had so many people come through it, there's a yearning, like, is there a Cohort 22? what's the next step? So I'm actually piloting that right now with our current coaches. So we've got Justin and I who lead it, and then we've got five facilitators, and each facilitator works with three or four coaches, and those form the team that work with the participants. So I'm actually doing a coaching sort of leadership project with them and leading them through middle leadership skills and doing that curation of what we need to be 21st century educators. In this day and age, you can't be a victim to your calendar. You have to focus on what's coming. You have to know what's coming ahead. Otherwise you're going to wake up every morning and kind of be slapped in the face by the calendar. And so these are some of the skills that we're working on, and we're even bringing up things like Roland Barthes and what it means to be a teacher leader, and you can lead in different ways. You don't always have to be out front. You can be by the side. You can be behind. You can be, a great follower too. So.
Totally. Positioning, like, we don't always have to be positioned at the front. And I like that you said, you know, it doesn't have to be from the side. It can be from behind. It can be from any sort of position, but it doesn't always have to be that central spotlight on me kind of role. I want to move forward with the next question. Because I feel like it kind of relates to this. One of the things I found in my work was that teacher candidates, and I'm not talking like the experienced teachers, it's more those new teachers who are new to teaching. So they're still, you know, getting their feet wet, trying to figure things out. We've all been there. Sometimes I still think I'm there, and it's been 9 years. But teacher candidates, they often consult the internet for resources with the same frequency that they do their professors or mentor teachers. And when I read that and corroborated it with other sources, I was kind of blown away, because I'm sure we've grown up in a time when we're always told, don't trust what's on the internet. And it's gone from that to, of course I can trust it, it's from the internet. Again, it still blows my mind that happens. We talk about 21st century competencies, and one of those competencies is viewing things with a critical eye, being able to critically evaluate and say, wait, this doesn't seem right. How do teachers bring that into the classroom? I've always wondered that myself. I mean, for me, it's just a matter of being distrustful of everything. But realistically speaking, how do we bring those competencies in?
Yeah, I think it's a huge opportunity for, you know, for like Bachelor of Education programming. I think it's a huge opportunity for people, like for organizations like Cohort 21 too. Like there's other organizations that are out there that sort of create a nice little bridge between Bachelor of Education and your first 5 years of teaching. And I think Klingenstein Institute is one of them. So how do we bring that to new to teaching or to teacher candidates? There's a number of different ways. And I think one thing I would add to your intro to this question is that with ChatGPT, we're seeing the evolution of agents in artificial intelligence, where you have these specific education-based agents that will answer mm-hmm. questions, give you a lesson plan, and those types of things. And so we need to have a disposition, or at the very least a stance, where we know that to take something that has been artificial intelligence has generated, or to take something off the internet, we need to reinforce teacher candidates and new teachers that the magic of education is actually in their ideas.
Yes.
It's in the relationships that you are building. And so anything that's coming off the internet is benign to your relationships. And so you have to put it through your filter, and you have to generate some ideas off of that. I'm not opposed to that as a starting place at all. But this notion of critical evaluation, the critical evaluation has to be, is this going to be valuable for my students? And so first and foremost, you've got to look at policies. You've got to look at what's allowable in your school, what's allowable in terms of everything from like copyright to where you can take your students, depending on what's been generated. And then you have to look at the curriculum. Look at your curriculum and look what you're meant to teach. And are you getting to those expectations specifically? And I think that's a really great place to start mm-hmm. with that critical lens, is what is the curriculum that you're actually looking to get to? What are these essential questions? So I subscribe to Wiggins and McTighe, and they're this notion of understanding by design or backwards planning. So what is the big learning that you want your students? So I think looking at all of those things is going to help you have that critical lens. But mm-hmm. most importantly, it relies on the relationships that you build with students.
100%. Yeah. It's one of the things that my mentor teacher way, way, way back used to tell me was Maslow's before Bloom's. So you take care of the base needs before you get mm-hmm. to the learning bits. And I cannot agree with you more.
And I think, too, I was just talking about this on a panel when it comes to generative artificial intelligence, is that, you know, going back to one of the founding pieces of Cohort 21, critical evaluation is fine done on your own. It's massively improved when you do it within a network.
100%, right?
When you can build a good network of friends and colleagues and say, hey, I've got this idea, what do you think about this? It allows the position of the internet and generative AI to become more powerful for you.
Yeah.
Right? Like here's something that I can use, but wait, I've got to put it through this critical lens. You know, and I've got some policy I've got to look at, I've got curriculum I gotta look at, but I also have some colleagues. Does this work? You know,
yeah.
and I've got my student relationships too. So
yeah,
that's what I think in terms of reconceptualizing this in the 21st century classroom. Yeah.
When I first started teaching, you know, I'd often come up with what I thought was the perfect lesson plan.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then I'm sure it's happened with you too. You show it to my teaching partner, who I interviewed in the last episode of this podcast. She would look at my work and be like, "But you missed this, this, and this," and I'd be like, okay, I hate my life, but thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, and it is just so valuable. And I work on a team here. We teach a course called Digital Wisdom to grades 5, 6, 7, and 8, mm-hmm. and we've got a little Google chat going. And it's like, hey, I'm thinking of using this resource, and we all pile on. Amazing. Yeah. Use it in this way, or have you thought about this? Or here's another resource differentiated in this way and that way, and to have these connections is just so vital for, you know, what students experience.
Totally. And it's always nice when you can get that sort of critical feedback right at the get before mm-hmm. you kind of go down this rabbit hole of creating what you think is a perfect lesson plan. and then having your dreams crushed, you know, 2, 3, 4 days later when it's like, I'm just about to go teach this. And then you find out there's a bunch of things wrong. So that sort of practice, and you know, it spares the feelings. I find my feelings would have been spared if I knew earlier. It's always nice. And not even from an emotional side, just from a practice side, it makes things more efficient. One of the things I wanted to ask you about was professional development. I want to ask you about professional development because teachers often find it hard to see value in a lot of PD that they do. Is there any PD that you've seen so far revolving around AI? It's a very relatively new thing, so I don't know if there's PD around it. I see a lot of things from private vendors, but a lot of it seems to be things that you would already know if you'd been following ChatGPT since it was introduced.
There definitely is a lot of PD, professional development for educators, that exist with generative artificial intelligence. For me, none of it has been earth-shaking or like groundbreaking in the sense of just in the sense of I've been following it very closely. And I think that is the best professional development that you can do. So I can recommend a couple, like there's a podcast, which is called Hard Fork. It's a New York Times podcast. These two guys are amazing at what they do. They're fun to listen to, but they also have these really good nuggets. And there's an episode, I think it's episode 11, where they actually interview a teacher back in January of last year. So it's like month three. And this woman is just, she's a crackerjack. She's on fire with ChatGPT. And it's that optimism that I think is really significant. So there's a lot of great resources that are out there. There's prompt engineering courses, like micro credentials that are on offer as well. And then there's this book, which is called The AI Classroom by Daniel Fitzpatrick. I've gotten a lot out of this book in terms of how best to set up your students and yourself for using AI in the classroom. But largely, it's experimentation.
For sure.
And it really depends on policies at your school, like what's allowed in terms of student data that's going in. So a lot of the stuff that I'm advocating for is teacher-led. So I will be the one using the AI, and I'll show students in that way. With the older grades, when they get into it, it's about prompting them effectively, using those critical lenses that we were just talking about. Do you think this is a good answer? What might tell you it's a good answer? You're using ChatGPT-3. Do you know that it's 3 years out of date at this point? Little things like that. And I think the best PD you can do is just keep trying it out and always have a wonderfully optimistic, cynical approach.
you have to combine those two. Optimism and cynicism. Balance is important for sure. Since we're still on the topic of AI, when computers were first introduced to the classroom, I wasn't a teacher yet, but when computers were started to be used more widely, we often talked about digital literacy. That phrase has evolved now from literacy to competency. And I think that's an important step to take because it's not just about like knowing what technology is, but it's knowing how to use it and what the repercussions of its use may be. We move now to artificial intelligence. And again, we're back at, I feel, the literacy stage because we're still kind of just figuring it out. But do we stop at literacy or should we be aiming for competency despite like how quickly it evolves? Because I can sit down and think I know about AI, but it changes.
I think those are two very different things, right? To be competent at using artificial intelligence is different than being literate.
Yes.
Right. And it speaks to inputs and outputs. So if I am competent using artificial intelligence, that means I can use it effectively as a means to my ends. And whether that's like ethical, responsible learning or whether it's like writing emails for me or something along those lines. But literacy is different. Literacy for me is the ability to identify truth, the ability to identify, sourcing. And so for me, the two of them are more essential than ever. And I just finished Mustafa Suleiman's book. So he's the co-founder. One of the co-founders of DeepMind, which Google bought in 2015. And he's written this book and it is incredible. There are times where I'm like, yes, this is the answer. And there are times where I'm throwing the book on the ground because I'm like, oh my God, this future is pretty crazy. But he says that, there's just going to be too much information coming at us for us to truly discern what is truth. And totally, so in my mind, in my mind, we need trusted networks. We need sources that are human centered to support us in understanding what the truth is, because we are going to be able to manipulate your face, my face, my voice, and it's there's going to be too much information coming. And so this idea, this ability to have digital literacy, the ability to be able to trust yourself in what you are seeing and what you are reading and what you are hearing is going to be more important than ever. And the ability to use the competency to use generative AI, not to manipulate, dissuade, or persuade, right? But to use it authentically.
Yes.
These are the key skills that we're going to have to teach in order for our world to, you know, thrive and survive into the future. And so things like teaching students about, and you know, all of us, we need to do more lateral reading. So if we hear something that's happened, don't take it at face value. Read lateral, do some lateral research. Yes. What are other sources saying about this at that time? And yes, using critical thinking, like having this element of cynicism, this element of doubt behind everything that you read, and ask yourself, what's the purpose? Who's the author? I don't know if you've heard, but Sports Illustrated just got in a bunch of hot water because they released their CEO. I believe it was their CEO because they had someone do writing, and it was a totally artificial intelligence bot who was writing article after article for them. And it was
the articles good or
I have no idea. I don't know Sports Illustrated, but it's this. It is like, who are we getting this information from, and is it trustworthy? And is this who we want writing, or what we want writing for us? Is what we want writing our news? And so digital literacy is about demanding, I think, ethical and responsible reporting, ethical and responsible for writing.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. Just a quick aside, because I had a thought right now. Do you get the sense that something like AI and the need to be critical all the time and the need to like interrogate everything that we see, we read, the need to read laterally, is it making educators or even students more cynical in the way that they approach knowledge? That's a very loaded question. So
No. I mean, like, if it is, then rightly so.
Yeah.
Right? We have always, good educators have always said, this is why I think you need to know this.
Yeah.
Right. And now students are more willing to ask that question. Right?
Yeah.
I think where it gets dangerous is as soon as you have, you know, if you're using Google or, you know, Bing is back on the rise because it's got ChatGPT into it. But it's the first 10 responses or the first responses before the page, it goes below the page.
Yeah.
And teaching students that those aren't the right answers. Those are the paid answers.
And the popular ones, yeah.
And the popular ones, absolutely. You're absolutely right, Joe. So I don't think it's making them more cynical. I like to think it's making them more careful.
Right.
And if there's one thing I think that our students love to do is ask great questions.
Yeah.
And they have more and more good excuses to keep asking those questions about the purpose of what they're learning, which I think is great.
Totally. Yeah. The reason I asked is just we teach students to, you know, kind of approach things with an air of skepticism these days, which I think, you know, is right. We should be doing that. But sometimes I'm like, am I pushing them too far to like question literally everything that I'm teaching them and say, no, that can't be right.
But keep in mind, those conversations are happening within an academic environment, right? They're using generative artificial intelligence, they're using social media, they're using the internet for a whole bunch of super fun, joyful things too, right?
Yeah.
I think there's a balance here. We're teaching what's called like the third curriculum, which is right when you are seeing something that that makes your spidey sense go off, so to speak. Here's what you do about it.
Yeah.
So I think there's a balancing out
between
what they're getting in their academic classes and then how they're using it outside of the academic classes. And hopefully those two things are going to come to weave together and give them a healthy critical lens, not a cynical lens, but a critical lens.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's so critical that we are teaching values based education, right? We're teaching about, like, at our school, it's integrity. it's curiosity, or what we call inquiry, it's compassion, and it's courage, right? And we are constantly, we're not using those words all the time,
but
we're constantly setting up our students to have a framework in which to engage in their learning through one or more of these values.
You know, hopefully our students aren't coming out cynical. That's the last thing I would want. Skeptical, yes. Cynical, no. All right, Garth, let's move to the last question, because I know you're coming up on time. When teachers enter the profession, one of the things that can be super intimidating is the idea of being evaluated, or the idea of seeing your practice as an educator that you trained really hard for, that you feel you prepared really hard for, suddenly get put under a microscope and looked at and critiqued. That practice is supposed to strengthen what we do as educators. But again, it's intimidating, and sometimes it feels pretty subjective, because you've got an administrator, you know, doing a walkthrough saying, these are the things that didn't really jive, maybe redo it. And then in your head, you're thinking, if you'd come in maybe 5 or 10 minutes later, or if you'd come in the next day, you would have seen an awesome lesson. Instead, you saw me with very sweaty armpits because I'm super nervous. Is there room here for something like AI to change the way that teaching practice is evaluated?
Oh, geez. Well, I just finished this, the second wave, it's called, by Mustafa Suleiman, as I said earlier. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of the latter half of that book is about surveillance societies that we see in the UK and in China.
Yeah.
So that's immediately where my mind goes. And so the answer is an overwhelming no. We don't need AI monitoring classrooms or anything along those lines. If anything, I would like to think that, and this might be naive of me, but I'd like to think that AI will shift the way teacher practice is evaluated away from the administrative mm-hmm. side of things, and more towards how are you building relationships in the classroom?
Right.
How are you connecting the learning with your students in the classroom? So evaluation, so I'd say a couple of things. One, is it evaluation or is it assessment?
Right.
Right. And if there's a walkthrough, is it consistent and is it frequent, so that you have a developing picture and not just a 5-minute snapshot?
Right.
It's kind of like a report card, right? A report card early on in the year is a snapshot of where they are, as opposed to the final report card, which is a holistic picture of the student in the course by the end of the year. I think that's really important. And I always advocate for assessment. We want our faculty to feel safe to grow and make mistakes and learn. And that is the purpose of educational leadership. It is the rising tide that lifts all boats, right? Like, you mm-hmm. want your faculty to succeed. Now, education isn't for everybody. So how do you how are you assessing in a way that there's self-discovery? How are you assessing in a way that makes the educators live the values? And when it comes to generative AI in the classroom, how are you making sure that education, the learning that's going on in your classroom, is human-centered? Mm-hmm. That's how I think AI will change the way teacher practice is evaluated. Right now, it's a lot of it is on paperwork.
Yep.
It's how are you lesson designing and stuff like that. We know how to lesson design, and generative AI can write them up as, you know, really, really great. So,
yeah.
So we can actually spend our time, as I said earlier, we can spend our time now putting it through the filter of our school values, our school mission. Yeah. We can sit with our colleagues and say, is this a good lesson? How would you change this lesson? Have you done it before? You know, do you know my students? Like, you teach my students as well. So put this work with them. I think that's how it might change teaching practice.
Right. Is it something that can, I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, but it can save administrators time, basically, in having to look over those bits of paper and spend more time doing those walkthroughs, being with the teachers, and like actually observing the practice instead of worrying about having to take things off?
Yeah, I think that's the case. But also, it'll help educators with that paperwork that the administrators have to look through.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, dear ChatGPT, how are you today? Can you please write me an 8-lesson unit on land-based learning, incorporating grade 9 geography, these following expectations.
Yeah.
Boom, there it is. And then that's your starting place. And then you build off of that, you iterate it, and you say, what's right for my students in here? And what can I add? What can I, as a human, as someone who knows the students, bring to that initial design?
Yeah.
So you've just saved yourself a lot of time, and you've saved yourself a lot of you know, paperwork, because it's right there and you're just iterating off of it. And I think that is a fair place to start.
MacArthur's, they're not super related to my project work, but I just wanted to ask you about your favorite ChatGPT fact or a tidbit of knowledge. The one that I'd like to share is that if you actually start off by complimenting ChatGPT, it supposedly turns out a better output.
I've heard that, and I'll one up you.
Yeah.
I've heard through Hard Fork that if you offer it a tip, say, hey, I'll give you $100 to do this really well, that will increase its response.
Now, yeah.
The director of our innovation hub, Adam Kaplan, he said, what, you know, someone asked him today, what's the difference between ChatGPT 3.5 and ChatGPT 4? And he said, It's like asking a grade 9 student versus asking a grade 12 student. I think money talks with either of those students.
Yeah.
So that's why I think the tip might work. You know, I'll tip you $100 if you give me a good answer.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
That I did not know. I'm going to try that the next time I use it.
And hey, listen, we're recording on December 13th, 4:35 Eastern Standard Time. ChatGPT 4 is back open for subscriptions.
Yeah. And
closed for a long time. So it's back open now.
Yeah. I'm so glad because I was finally able to resubscribe. I let my subscription lapse prior and get back into using the custom GPTs. Have you had a chance to use it yet?
Actually, we have one on our podcast. We have a lassoing leadership agent.
Oh, amazing. Okay.
We feed it all of our scripts. Yeah, it's great.
And before we wrap up, I'm so glad you came back to Lassoing Leadership because I wanted to ask you about that to tie things off. Can you tell me about Lassoing Leadership?
Yeah, sure. It's a 15 to 20 minute podcast. We take one episode of Ted Lasso and we do a podcast on it where we pull out, you know, what are the leadership lessons, not education necessarily, but what are the leadership lessons that we see there? My co-host is Jason Rogers. He's head of Dr. Jason Rogers. He's head of school at Rundle School in Calgary. And we just have so much fun. We take a stab at retitling the episodes. We talk about our favorite characters. And then at the end of each episode, we provide a leadership challenge, something to think about or provoke in our listeners to try out for that week. So it comes out weekly and it's Lassoing Leadership. It's available on Spotify and Apple.
Awesome. I just finished listening to your episode this morning where you talked about objects that represent leadership.
Yeah.
It was such a cool episode. Everybody who's listening, I am going to link everything that we talked about from books to website links to Lassoing Leadership in the show notes. So please do be sure to check them out. They are very cool things to listen to, read, and just take in. Whether you're an educator or a student, very valuable. Garth, I'd like
Thanks,
to Joe. Thank you for your time. It was great talking to you. It's always fun to talk to another educator, but I think you are only the second administrator that I've spoken to in this podcast.
Well, listen, great conversation. Thank you so much. These are great questions. Got me thinking too. I really, really enjoyed it.
Great. Thank you. And again, hopefully we see you back on here at some point. And yeah, love to be able to talk to you again.
Thanks, Joe. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Bye now. You've been listening to another episode of That High School Life that was recorded this past December. A special thank you again goes to Garth Nichols of Havergal College for taking the time to speak with me. If you're in a leadership role as an educator, or if you're a fan of Ted Lasso, I highly recommend his podcast, Lassoing Leadership. Each week, Garth and his co-host, Jason Rogers, explore the leadership lessons that can be learned from Ted Lasso. A link to Lassoing Leadership can be found in the show notes, as well as a link to Cohort 21 and the resources that we talked about today. And lastly, if you liked what you heard, be sure to subscribe to That High School Life on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Until next time, my name is Joe Takar, and you've been listening to That High School Life. Have a good one.